For hepatitis B, we're going to use the vaccine. It's the best way to treat hepatitis B. Once a person has hepatitis B or C, we can use interferon alpha. Your body naturally makes this stuff, but we're going to give you even more. Causes flu-like symptoms and causes depression, fatigue, alopecia, blood disorders, thyroid dysfunction, and heart damage. Whew, that sounds fun, doesn't it? Who here wants some interferon? Okay. Now, before we give the interferon to a person, we have to do a screening test. We have to test for thyroid dysfunction, heart problems, blood disorders, but we're also going to do a psychological evaluation. If someone is at risk for depression or for suicide, they're not going to get it. And even with the psychological screening, there's a heck of a lot of people who go on the therapy and then come right back off because they just can't handle it. Right, but you can treat it and help prevent the damage from occurring to your liver.
But either way,
you're stuck with it. Yes, for now. Ribavirin is the only is only used in combination with interferon. Lamivudine is also used for HIV as well as hepatitis B, and then adenofir is used for Hep B. The only ones I think I'm going to ask you about, I might ask you about ribavirin. What do you need to know about ribavirin? Only used in combo. For interferon, what do you need to know? Psychological testing and causes all those horrible problems. What do you need to know about hepatitis A, hepatitis B, and hepatitis C? How they're transmitted. What do you need to know about hepatitis C besides the transmission? Number one cause of liver cancer. Influenza, the flu. Now, by the way, there's something called Haemophilus influenza. It's a bacteria, and you all got immunized for it when you were a little kid. Did you know that? Okay, so Haemophilus influenza is not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is viral influenza. Now, what is influenza? Okay, it's a virus. Good. Okay, it's a virus that mutates every year. Okay, what does it cause? The flu. Okay, what is the flu? Okay, so the most common symptoms are fever, myalgia. What's myalgia? Muscle pain. Who here has had the flu in the past couple of years? What was the first symptom that you had that you knew you were going to have the flu? You felt achy. I remember once, 1997. I mean, this was like, you know, I felt really good that morning, but around 11 o'clock, it was a beautiful day, driving with the top, well, I didn't have a top down, driving with the windows down, and I was just like, oh, you just can't ask for a better day than this. It was like, you know, it was winter. Yeah. It was winter. It was Gainesville, so it's not a bad winter. And I just felt like my legs start hurting when I was driving in the car. And I'm like, what's up with that? I haven't worked out in the past couple of days. And then, like, it just get war- and, you know, just spread down the legs and spread it. And, like, that was the worst flu. I mean, like, I remember 4 days later, 10 o'clock at night, and I go, I don't think I'm going to die anymore. That's all I knew. I was better. Anyway. So, myalgia, fever, myalgia, what else? Okay, can cause GI symptoms like nausea and vomiting, diarrhea, but it doesn't necessarily. What are the other types of symptoms that one gets? Either GI or respiratory. So, can cause symptoms similar to colds, can cause bronchitis type symptoms. And what's the most common cause? What's the problem with the flu? I mean, don't most people just get over it? Okay. The problem with the flu is, one, it's highly contagious. And two, it weakens the person's body and sets them up for secondary infections. What type of infections will those secondary usually be? Usually it's going to be bacterial. So pneumonia and bronchitis are very common afterwards. Who's most at risk for these secondary? The very young and the very old. We say very old, okay, over 65. And people who are immunosuppressed and people who smoke. Okay, so they're more at risk. So every year, several thousand people die of the flu. And every now and then, there's a worldwide pandemic of flu. The last one, when was it?
3 years ago.
No. That wasn't a pandemic. No. It was in World War I, 1919, or maybe 1918. And we had over 20 million people in the world die of flu. 20 million people did not die of the flu 3 years ago.
How many people?
About 18 million people. Now, granted, it was the end of World War I, and a lot of people think that the World War I living conditions had a lot to do with it. But nowadays, what do we have that they didn't have that could make it worse for us? Widespread air travel. So we can spread it everywhere much more efficiently than they could back then. All right, so there's a lot of angst that goes into preventing the flu. So every year, it's encouraged that people get their flu vaccine. So the flu vaccine contains three strains. What three strains are they? The three most common last year. Now, what's the problem with that?
It's not last year.
It's not last year, and this is a very mutatable or mutagenic virus. So what happened last year might have nothing to do with what happens this year. But then again, it might. You just don't know. Coverage ranges from about 2 weeks to 6 months. So I'm going to give everyone in this front row the flu vaccine. For Kelly, it might never help her at all. For Arla, she's immune for 2 weeks. Harmony, she's immune for 6 months. Amy, 4 weeks. Kim, 6 weeks.
So how do you know if, which
one you are? You don't. Say again? Right. The max is 6 months. What? The flu season lasts? Oh, yeah. I'm not sure if the worldwide has a different formula or the same. I don't know. But this is how it works in the States. No. I don't think it's regional, though. It's state or countrywide. All right. Now, somewhere between 70 to 90% of young adults, meaning from ages 20 to 50, become immune after they get the injection, which means that 10 to 30% they wasted their money. The problem is you don't know which one you're going to be until afterwards. Now, the elderly it works even less well and lasts a shorter time than for young people. You can get it via an IM injection or an intranasal injection, and I think I just read an article about a couple months ago that they're investigating this new intradermal thing where it gets injected with this tiny, super short needle. It's like 2 millimeter long needle, and they say that that's better than either of these. So you might be seeing that in the next year or two. Anyway, so should you get the injection? Should you get the flu vaccine or not? Okay. Generally speaking, people who are at risk for contracting the flu or who are at risk of dying from the flu, such as the young, elderly, and immunocompromised, should get the vaccine. It doesn't cost very much money, and my side effects are generally mild, so there's not necessarily harm in getting the vaccine. If it doesn't work, okay, you wasted $10. Some insurances, you get it free. Some clinics, you can get it free. Now, for you young people who are, well, you're going to be in clinical, so you're going to be at risk, so you might want to get it. I don't get it, but I tell my patients that, you know, they should probably consider getting it if they're one of those risk groups. By the way, every year that I've gotten one of these, I got the flu that year. All right, let's talk about side effects. What are the side effects of the vaccine? Mild flu-like symptoms. What does that mean? Fever, myalgia, maybe some GI symptoms, maybe some runny nose. Does it actually cause the flu? No. So what are causing those symptoms then? Okay, your body is reacting as though it's reacting to the vaccine. So that means it's working. Good job. Oh, the other thing, sometimes when you get the flu shot, people can have reactions where they have hypotension afterwards. So some places when you get the flu shot, you just don't get it and then leave. They make you sit around for 20 minutes before they'll let you leave, just so you know. One other thing we need to talk about with that, eggs. How many of you have taken your quiz so far, your online quiz? What's the deal with the vaccine and eggs? Arla? Or Kelly? Not necessarily. Shouldn't. Why? Because the bacteria is grown on an egg medium. So even though the vaccine itself doesn't have eggs in it, because it grew in an egg medium, it could have some egg proteins, which could cause allergy. Now, what happens if there's a Q&A on the CDC website that says, well, what if you need to have this or you're going to die? Well, it says, well, you can have it, and we'll, most people who are allergic to eggs don't have a problem with the vaccine, just a few. Any of those who have it, they think it's usually other things other than that. But anyway, for what it's worth, it's recommended that you do not. Okay, so how can you not get the flu from the flu vaccine? Go ahead and tell me. The viruses are dead. They can't cause the flu. But your body reacting will cause flu-like symptoms. All right. Okay. Now, if you have the flu, there are some drugs that we can use that will help lessen the severity of the flu. Amantadine and rimantadine, there's high resistance against them, and there's very low activity, which means they basically don't work. Second generation, neuraminidase, there's more activity and less resistance, and these will be oseltamir and zanamivir, whatever. I don't care. Probably will not ask you a question about these because I really don't care. All right, now, let me ask you this question. You get the flu, or your patient gets the flu. What do you do for them? Okay, I heard someone give them something to drink. So you keep them hydrated. What else? Get the fever down. What drugs would do that? Acetaminophen or ibuprofen or another NSAID. Would you give aspirin? Generally speaking, no. Even though only kids are at risk of Reye syndrome, we just don't use aspirin for that anymore. As I said, ibuprofen. So generally speaking, just tell people not to give aspirin because most people just aren't sophisticated enough to go, well, I take aspirin for myself. I should give it to my kid too, right? No. So anyway, no aspirin. Ibuprofen or naproxen or something similar or Tylenol. In my case, I would take both. I am kind of the Seinfeld school of thought on this matter. What's the dose, absolute max dose that will kill me? Give me a little bit less. Because I feel like I'm going to die already. So, All right, so you give them, you hydrate them, you give them something to bring the fever down and help with the myalgia.
Okay.
All right, what else? Say again? The acetaminophen and the ibuprofen would both help with myalgias. What else? Okay, if they've got respiratory symptoms, you're going to give them drugs for the respiratory symptoms. So what do we give for runny nose? What? Not Sudafed. Well, I mean, you can. Okay, you would give an antihistamine. And why Benadryl? Why not Claritin? Okay, because in this case, there's not any there's no histamine being produced. You're giving the Benadryl because it has a drying side effect, anticholinergic side effect. All right, so you're going to give Benadryl. We could also give Sudafed. What's the problem with giving Sudafed by itself? I know this because I have done it.
It keeps you awake.
Keeps you awake. And here's the thing. If you've got these nasal symptoms, you feel like crap. You take Sudafed and it dries you up. Every time you take a breath in now, guess what happens to our nice air-conditioned air? You feel it irritate and go all the way down your nasal passages, especially if you're out in Colorado where the air is really dry and cold. So it just really irritates it. So give both together. That way the person... Yeah. By the way, is there a drug that has all of these things in it at one time?
NyQuil.
Yeah. All right. If a person is having chest symptoms, then what do we give them? Expectorant. What's the expectorant? Guaifenesin. What else could we give them? Drug. Albuterol. All right. Pretty good. I think that's it, right?